Welcome to episode 42 of The Great Divide. 42 is a big number. We cannot promise you the answer to the life, the universe and everything, but we can promise you part 4, and hopefully this will be the final part of the Steel Town deep dive. And we're gonna jump straight into where we left off, and we start with, what else? The Great Divide. Great Divide. Oh my gosh.
Our namesake.
So I guess we need to do right by this song. We both spoke about this song as we connected today. And this is the song that we both struggle with in terms of making sense of. And we kind of know what it's about, which is about the growing rift between union and management in England. Which I had to see that to believe it. That's not a conclusion I would ever have gotten to on my own.
No, me neither.
So the lyrics are very convoluted. I will start with the lyrics because they are the tough part. Actually, no, I won't. I will start with the music because I think the music is the best part of the song. I think the way it starts, that guitar and the build-up and the drum roll and you kick off, great way of starting a song, and it's very Big Country-esque.
Awesome.
So it's absolutely magnificent, and the way they play through it. To be honest, I really don't know how to attack this song. I need to... perhaps the way to do it, instead of us having our own little dialogues about it, maybe we do a discussion together and get through this together. So I will throw this out to you.
All right.
As far as musical highlights on the song, I mentioned the intro. I will also mention the outro as being very great. And we kind of end this podcast with it, so I think we don't need to play it back to people. But the guitar work, the middle part, how would you describe that?
The soloing?
Yeah, the soloing.
Oh, it's it's classic. It's as you say, the music to this song is fantastic to me. It's an awesome example of what I love about Big Country. The midsection, I think, is just brilliant dual guitar stuff happening between Stewart and Bruce. Vicious. It's got that. I was saying to my wife, we were listening to some Skids the other day, and I remembered The Edge talking about Stewart's guitar playing, and he said he always had venom in his playing. Mm-hmm. And I can really hear venom in that section, but not you know, bad venom, but just like this viciousness about it. But it's great. It's for a righteous cause.
Yeah, attitude.
It's got a lot of attitude. I love it. And that intro, you know, since you're asking me, that intro is one of my favorite intros of all time by Big Country. The tone of that guitar is the Big Country distorted guitar tone that I absolutely adore. It kind of sounds like that midsection in The Crossing where it stops and bam 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 bam. It's got that same feel to it. Mm. I love it. So anyway, I'm stealing a little bit of your thunder, so I'll stop. But
no, but that's fine. But the reason I'm asking you about that guitar thing, because there is a buildup in the song. He says, "Here comes the sign of hope," and then there's this thunderous, venomous thing.
Yeah, that's good. Actually, that's cool. I'm glad that you said that. Yeah, that is the sign of hope, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. So I don't know how that plays in. That here comes hope, and it sounds venomous and angry.
Right. Well, it's almost like to me, it's like here comes the cavalry over the hill, and they can be venomous and angry.
The union man is coming charging in to take the foreman.
It's so funny because here comes another nerd alert, but you know how George Lucas always gets this bad rap for, and rightly so in my opinion, for this whole plot line in the prequels of the Trade Federation and trade wars, and people say that as if, oh, it's such a boring thing to talk about. So, but you kind of hear that when you think about this song is about the growing split between unions, and it's like, really? I mean, I'm sure there's a lot in there that it just escapes me, but I don't like to think of it that way. And
no.
It's a very working class song, and I think about it from that perspective very much so. In fact, I can get into some specific lyrics that I love, but I don't think about this overriding theme of unions working to fight against it just seems too monotonous.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah, I think you have lines like "I had the foreman's kiss," which in the context of the song, us knowing what the song is about, could mean that he's in good favor with his boss or management,
right,
due to the fact that perhaps he's good at what he does or whatever. He's the favored son. So as with many of the songs on Steel Town, they're just as relevant to the disillusionment with corporate culture as they are to economies being driven by manufacturing or industry. But I can hear myself just discussing that. I'm losing interest in this. I have no passion. <It's>
Well, right. Let me give you... Yeah, I agree with you. I can give you an interpretation if you're ready for it, of what I think about the song, and maybe it'll... At least for me, it pushes away a little bit of that whole union thing. I mean, clearly it's a working class song. It ties in very well with a song like Steel Town in some respects and some of these other things. I don't, again, a lot of it I don't understand, but here's my interpretation. It's from the very beginning. I walk the slide that only killers will fear. What an odd line that is.
Mm-hmm.
But I think about it. It's like, well, what is a place that only killers will fear? What would killers fear? Would they fear justice? Would they fear righteousness? Would they fear paying for something that they've done? So I get the feeling that he's setting this protagonist up in the beginning as someone who is on the right side of something. I don't know what exactly that is, but here comes the skill of choice and all the noise that I will ring along. He's talking about his skill in a particular trade. He chose a particular trade area, and it sounds like it's something where there's a lot of noise involved, whether it's working in a mill, working in a factory. This is something he chose. But I'm not going to read every lyric and go through what I think of every line, but generally what I think about this song is that it seems to be from the perspective of a guy who's working his life away and is realizing that he's realizing the important things in life that are passing him by. And I think we see that when he says, I suddenly find the truth and all it is size and youth. It's almost talking about the futility of what he views as the futility of a life spent doing nothing but drudgery type of work. And we've had that kind of theme before in Stewart's songs, like the song Charles, even as far back as the Skids.
Mm-hmm.
We've got this feeling of a guy stuck at his machine and just doing this robotic drudgery work until he's not even a man anymore. And I kind of get that feeling, even the chorus, fire away, far away, push the token door. Fire away can be looked at as the fire of the industry that he's a part of, whatever that is. Far away, push the token door, I've always viewed as this quote-unquote door of opportunity that people maybe talk about. You know, if you do well on your job, you can go through the next door of opportunity, you can move up. And he's calling it a token door. Like, what does this really mean? What kind of opportunities am I really having doing this? And it gets even more stronger when he says lie away, steal a day, as if this whole thing is just a lie and it's stealing his days away as he's making this engine roar. So I don't think he's saying that work is a bad thing necessarily, and maybe that gets more down to the whole idea of this union divide between unions and management that he was thinking about that I can't really wrap my head around because
that's what I'm missing, and I was hoping you would that hook would come, but it doesn't come for me. I totally see the thing about wasting away and not living up to your potential, which we have in Just a Shadow, which we will talk about later, and to some degree East of Eden. So but that's not what the song is supposed to be about.
Well, I think maybe that gets down to the fact that, or that can get down to more with what I was saying there, is like he's not saying necessarily that, I guess, the work it's in and of itself is a bad thing, or that he doesn't want to work necessarily. But if you're going to take it from the whole perspective of unions versus management, maybe he's looking at the conditions of the work and thinking that these conditions are not suitable to a good working environment where you feel and take pride in yourself, and that, that you feel like people are giving you respect for what you do. And that's the only way that I can get from it. I mean, the whole, I had the foreman's kiss, but then when he says, I never lisped, first of all, that is like a really weird lyric, and it's so hard to even say. The word lisp is difficult enough to say, but then when you add the ED onto it, lisped, you know, it's very difficult to say.
I never lisped.
Yeah, and
For years, I thought that was missed, by the way, which kind of makes sense that he was good at his work. He never missed. But then I saw lisped. Right.
I thought the same thing as you. Yes.
Yeah.
I was like, wow. And then he says, I'm sure it was a downfall. So it almost seems like he did have the foreman's kiss. But the way I take that is when he never lisps it. I've heard someone else say this too before, and I kind of glommed onto it. But it's almost like he's not one to just say all the right things. Like, he will speak out if he feels like he needs to speak out, and he thinks that could be a downfall for him. Maybe he's whereas as far as management is concerned. So I guess the foreman in this scenario would not necessarily be a part of management. They would be more on his level or his side. I don't know. And then we get into the point where I'm trying to figure it out too, but.
Yeah, but if there is a union, there needs to be a management on the other side. And we have no reference to that management apart from that foreman that I see, other than implied. And it could be implied. Maybe we're taking it too literally. In fact, I'm sure we are.
Yeah.
But like you said, we don't really have the deep one. This is the song that I struggle with, and I believe you struggle with, in terms of trying to understand every single line. And perhaps we're not meant to. And perhaps we shouldn't force it. And So I guess ultimately for me, I think the lyrics, it's kind of ridiculous if you consider the subject matter and then how poetic this comes out. It is ridiculous. I can't think of a single other artist who would have written this way about this topic, if at all they were to write about this topic. So there's kind of like two things in the same thing there. That's kind of impressive. But I had to read what it was about to understand it. And you have your own associations. The ones I had, I had long forgotten. It definitely didn't fit what I understood it was about. So I can enjoy the lyrics and I can enjoy the music. I think these days I primarily enjoy the music. The lyrics are nice, but the thing of them being so abstract and about an area that I don't have a closeness to or feel that really engaged with, I don't connect with them. So I think that's the reason why this song, I can't rate it as highly as some of the other songs. It would be in the latter half of the album. That's primarily due to a lack of personal connection with the lyrics. So it's not like when I was 12, when this album came out, and a song like Steel Town, it's not like I personally connect, like I've been working in a steel mill and gotten fired and I feel the personal rage, but I know what it's about. And you always know someone, even at that age, you understand the struggles of life, or you're starting to understand it. So there is a connection even there. And then you have write out songs like Come Back to Me. Everybody who's lost someone can connect with that song. And then you have songs like The Great Divide, when I don't know what the hell he's singing about, so I wouldn't connect with it, but I would still look at the lyrics and say, you know, it's pretty cool. I walk the slide that only killers will fear. What an awesome line. I have no idea what it's about. So I will admire it, but I won't connect with it. So that's the reason why I would not rate this song or rank it as high as others. But this comes back to the preface we had before getting into this. What does a ranking mean? It's a great song.
Right. Yeah, no, I'm with you. I mean, it without a doubt, I've said this before, it is, to me, this is probably the most dense, and I don't mean dense as in dumb, obviously. Excuse me there. I mean, dense is just in, the meaning is so hard to decipher from these lyrics. They're just so poetic, but so difficult,
abstract,
to,
and
very abstract, and I think this is, for me personally, this is one of the best examples of of a song that it, even though I feel that way about the lyrics, when I look at them and try to figure out everything that's being said, there's always been something about this song to me that just absolutely connects with me. And it's probably comes down to the power of just a few of the lines, rather than taking in the whole and everything as one type of quote unquote story. But there's just some of these lines that just resonated with me so strongly, and then put that together with the music that really, really resonates with me strongly, that this song is actually way up there for me. It's so many of the best big country songs, they just hit this strange nerve inside. It's almost like I don't know. It's just it touches this part of your consciousness that you may not be aware of, your subconscious, your preconscious. I don't know what it is. But when you try to think about it and put some sort of sense to it, you really can't do it. It almost reminds me of a dream. When you wake up from a dream and it's been one of the most amazing dreams that you've had, and it leaves you shaking maybe and feeling, if it's a good dream, it gives you this amazing feeling of, it's like of melancholy and joy and all these emotions rolled into one. And then you try to, when you wake up, you for a second, you know exactly what you just dreamed, and then you try to talk about it, and you realize you have no idea what you're talking about, and you cannot remember exactly what happened, and it doesn't even make sense anymore. But it gave you this feeling that you knew was real and that you can't deny. And that's kind of how I feel about this song, which makes it even more, it makes me like it even more, because it's got a certain mystery to it. But there are these really great lines throughout, though. I mean, they really do. I love the line, I know my machine, I sweat and steam until the job card colors, contrasting with, I know all my dreams, I shout and scream until the day's first break. What a great line there. And again, this would kind of lend itself more to the whole general idea of someone feeling like their work is futile in terms of what they want to really accomplish with their life. And he's painting this picture of himself dreaming, and in his dreams, while he's dreaming, he's shouting and screaming in his dreams, which really speaks to someone being incredibly frustrated. And I remember when these lyrics were printed out, and maybe they're still this way, I haven't looked in the deluxe edition, but I remember there was an exclamation point after that line, until the day's first break, and there was a big exclamation point. And I always thought that was interesting, that they would actually put punctuation there. So then there must have been a reason for that. And it's just one of those other odd things that I always wondered about. Well, why would they put an exclamation point there? Obviously, they wanted to really get that line across. But yeah, I don't know what the quote-unquote great divide is. Here comes the great divide. I don't know exactly what that is, but I'm assuming it's, at least in the context of the song, it's this divide between what, the way I'm taking it, this divide between what this person wants out of life and what is actually there, what his life actually is. There's this chasm between what he wants to be. And I do feel like there's a little hope in this song. Clearly, he even says it. Here comes the sign of hope. Mm-hmm. Like you, I don't know exactly what that is, but the way I take it is that the hope there is that he has had this realization that I find the truth, and all it is size and youth. And maybe he's thinking that this realization isn't necessarily something that he's going to just resign himself to, but maybe that this realization is something that's going to push him to try to do something else, to try to break out of this hopeless, futile situation that he's in. That's how I look at it, that it's kind of a
hopeful revolution.
Yeah, exactly. It's like this hopeful realization. It's like Norma Rae from
yeah.
If you go back to the whole Union thing, Sally Field movie, maybe this guy's going to be the Norma Rae of the Union. He's going to stand up and organize everyone. But I mean, clearly there's some of that going on here. I don't think it's by accident that people said this was the Union and management rift and everything. It's just something that I'm not aware of. I don't know how that was working in Scotland and the UK at the time. I mean, I'm sure it's worked the same way that it's worked here in America. We've had plenty of union uprisings and union struggles in the past, and I'm sure it's the same types of things. But yeah, it's something that when I look at it from that perspective, that doesn't mean a whole lot to me. So like you, I try to take these bigger themes from it, and
It's best that, in this case, I think.
Yeah, I think so too.
So maybe we're disappointing people that we're not really explaining or going through the song in detail, but come on, guys. If you can do it, send us a speak pipe. We promise to play you in full.
Yeah, if there is anyone who can really shed light on the whole union management rift thing and how these lyrics play in, please do. I mean, like we say, the general things are clearly there about this drudgery of work, et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera. But if there are more specifics that you think that you know about some of these lines, let us know. But I'm totally fine leaving the song as that more of a mysterious type of thing and just taking what I want to take from it. And,
yeah, absolutely. I think that the big thing here is this song illustrates perhaps more than most other songs the difference in outlook between The Crossing and the Steel Town. Is you still have this thing about hard work, but I think where The Crossing more had the farming allegories, here you have the factories.
Right.
And it's the same situation, but you're kind of, as a farmer, you know, a farmer's life is hard work. But when you work in a factory, there's a different element of clocking in, and you usually don't own the factory you work in. And you might not even own always the land as a farmer, but I think the factory thing is seen more as a downtrodden sort of surroundings, and you answer to the foreman. So I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised that there is a song about unions or the workers' rights here.
No, I'm not either, and it fits in perfectly with the themes of the album.
Mm.
And yeah, it certainly does. And I spent time working in a factory a little bit when I was younger, and it was one of the most miserable experiences I've ever had. it was probably a really good factory as far as the working conditions by most standards, but it was just so monotonous and so loud, and I had people like offering me drugs on my very first day working there. And I was in my teens at the time, my late teens, and I just couldn't do it. I worked there for maybe like a week or two, and I told my dad at the time, it's like, I'm just not cut out for this. I can't do this. End up getting a job at Dairy Queen, but, which was much better.
I want to see a picture of you behind the counter in your white apron.
I was making the peanut butter parfaits. The pay was much less, but I enjoyed it much more. But yeah, it was good. It was not the best summer job, but no. Yeah. So that's the way I look at this song. But from a more abstract sense, there's just always something about this song. Musically, this song just hits every note for me as far as what I want from Big Country. It's gigantic. It's anthemic. The guitars are, as we've already said, full of attitude and power. It's got, I remember Tony mentioning this song specifically in one of the old country clubs, is saying this was one of his favorite Big Country songs and one of his favorite bass parts, bass lines that he did. And I remember being so happy that he mentioned this song, because I've often felt alone in my love for this song. I know people love it, but I've often felt alone in how highly I love the song, because it's always lower on the rankings. But clearly, this is why I picked the song as the title for the podcast. It just, the song always resonated with me, and those lines, all it is size and youth. Talked about them many times on the show. Mentioned them to Stuart as being my favorite lines of his, and I just love them. They're so beautiful. Such chills come on to me when I think of them, and coupled with the music, the guitars on this are just killer. The drums are huge. It just has that spine tingling effect that I've always looked for. This is my Big Country crack. This is my Big Country heroin. It's what got me hooked on the band to begin with, and this kind of stuff. After I listen to this, I say, this is good stuff, man. And then someone plays me Leap of Faith, and that's why I say, I can't get into this as much. I want that high that I got from The Great Divide, which of course is not fair, and this is a whole other conversation.
Leap of Faith is your Big Country butt crack.
There you go. Make the t-shirt. No, but it's just that gigantic quote-unquote big music, which was a term that used to be thrown around back in those days, the big music, and that's what I loved about it. And it's not fair to expect a band to keep making that over and over again, but that did give me a certain a certain high that it's no other music has been able to accomplish. And The Great Divide is one of the best examples of a song for me in the Big Country catalog doing that. So
yeah, I'm not surprised, because I in some regards I see The Great Divide as a guitar player's song. I think
it is
full of guitar. Perhaps I'm going to be dangerous. It's a dangerous thing to say, because this album is so full of guitars, but I think The Great Divide really has the guitar players, connoisseurs, kind of riffs and fills and intros and everything. So I'm not surprised that you latch onto that perhaps a little bit more than me.
But yeah, you're right.
But I really like it. It's I like it enough to rank it as number 9, in fact.
Oh, that's a lot of like. It's funny that we have two dueling number 9s here. Well, for me, it is number 3. So it's big on my list. And probably at sometimes it would have been number 2, but maybe even at times it's number 1, but it's number 3. And yeah. I just have a distinct memory of hearing that this is the one song on this album that Flame of the West probably too, but I remember the moment that I heard that guitar opening of this song. I still remember the moment and how much it captured my imagination. So that's why it's big. It's up there for me.
Right.
Very difficult to figure this song out, but it works.
Yeah, sure. It sure does.
Oh, wait. Did we do the favorite lyric? Let's do...
Okay.
Do favorite lyric. So favorite line from this song.
I would have to pick "I Walk the Slide That Only Killers Will Fear."
Yeah,
cool. Just for the stark dramatics of those words.
It really is a cool line.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. And for me, you already know it.
Yeah.
I find the truth. Suddenly I find the truth. All it is size and youth. Beautiful line. One of his best. Okay, so on to the final song on Steel Town, Just a Shadow. All right, so I had a couple people ask me about this. Why did you dedicate these episodes to this person that we've never heard of at the beginning of all these episodes? Well, it was kind of a personal thing, and I appreciate Svein having no problem with me doing it, but I'll explain it now. But this is a good friend of mine. His name was Chris Herbaugh. I met him in junior college, and I didn't think about doing this, dedicating these shows to him when we first started talking about it. It was only when I started looking at the songs that I thought I would like to do that, because just for myself. He was probably one of the best friends I ever had, really. I mean, right up there with just a couple people that I've been friends with in my life. Just one of those friends who just strangely seems to share everything that you love, has the same sense of humor as you, and someone that you can learn things from and that he can learn things from you, et cetera, et cetera. Well, this guy I met, and I've met so many great people, present company excluded. No, I'm just kidding. Because of Big Country. And so many great things have come into my life because of Big Country, and this was another example of that. I remember being in a video production class in junior college, and we were working on these videos that we were putting together. And I remember hearing distinctly Just a Shadow coming from an editing booth, and I didn't know anybody else who loved Big Country. So I was like, whoa, what is going on here? And I heard the opening strains of Just a Shadow, and I went in there, and there was this guy, Chris, and I said, "Do you like Big Country?" And he said, "Yeah, I love Big Country." And he was using Just a Shadow to be the backing track of this video that he was working on that he called Man Birds. it was a video about hang gliding. And where we lived in this kind of country area, and there were a lot of small mountains, types of big hills, and there was this sort of community of hang gliders, and they would go hang gliding, and he took all this video of it, and he wanted to do a little mini documentary of it, and there was really no voiceover to the documentary. It was just all these great shots of people hang gliding, and he put Just a Shadow underneath it, and it fit so beautifully. So anyway, we became great friends as a result of that moment, and I remember him having the East of Eden 12-inch, and he played me Prairie Rose for the first time, and I'd never heard that before. I didn't even know what a 12-inch was. I think even then, I think he maybe clued me in on what that was. And he got me interested in many different forms of music The Replacements and Husker Du and punk stuff. And anyway, he was a big, huge influence on me and a great friend. And so that's why I dedicated this to him. He's no longer alive, sadly. He had similar issues as Stewart, strangely enough, and he passed away 2 weeks after Stewart did. So it was a very, very difficult month there for me. But he was a great friend. So I just wanted to dedicate these episodes to him because I think about him often still. And he loved Big Country, and we often talked about it. And he was one of those guys, though, actually, who completely left the Big Country fold after Peace in Our Time came out. In fact, I was always, after that, I was always trying to convert him back to Big Country, and he was kind of a little bit like, no, they're not sounding like the early stuff. But anyway, he always had a soft spot for them still, and he always would ask me about them. But I think about him a lot, and this brought a lot of that back up. So that's why I dedicated the episode to him, and thank you for allowing me to do a little tribute to him there. So on to the song, Just a Shadow. What a great way to end the album. I mean, it's a perfect way to end the album, both musically and lyrically. I think the title of this song says it all, and says everything that Stewart has been saying throughout this album, basically, the overall themes that he's been talking about. And this album kind of ends on this note. Everything I've said throughout this album reflects just a shadow of what humanity can be. And I think that's the message he's getting through here in a big, broad sense. This is just a shadow of what we can be. We can be so much better than this. He's laid it out how awful the various situations he's talked about are, from specific things he's mentioned to big things he's mentioned, on a world scale to a personal scale. And he's now giving this plea here. So it's not a completely hopeless album. And I like that. I'm really relieved that there, even though this song is certainly nowhere near a rousing, yay, we've done it or we can do it type of song by any stretch of the imagination, there's still at least a glimmer of hope. There's a plea to the listener, like, do something. This is not what we should be. We should be so much better than this. But
I could actually set you up a bit, because I have two quotes from Stewart.
Yeah, go ahead.
So it's a much easier song than most on the album. But what he said in the Country Club magazine 8 and 9, the combined issue, is it's about when people don't have the opportunities to lead the kind of life they would like and become a shadow of the people they should be, which is exactly what you said before. Yeah. I have a second quote from Sounds in 1990, so with a few years hindsight. This song is an encapsulation of the whole of Steel Town. It's a song about people not achieving their potential. It's very indicative of the time when it was written, right in the middle of the miners' strike. Mm. It summed up a lot of what I felt, having grown up in a mining family. I tried to do justice to the people involved, to write about them with dignity. So there you have it.
That's great. That is a perfect setup. Yeah, good. Well, I'm glad I'm on the right track then, because we see that throughout these lyrics. And I think the whole domestic abuse is pretty clear in the beginning, but it's more than just domestic abuse. It's not a song that's about don't hit your wife. It's just showing that this is a byproduct of this type of thing happening. And I think this could be the people that were from Corby or from the Steel Town or from any place that things turn on them, as they turned on the families in Steel Town. I mean, he says it went so well for you with a place right where you wanted and the ones to fill it too. So the person here maybe thinks that they've achieved that dream where they've got a job, they've got a family, they've got a home, and it looks great. But then it all turns on them, whether the industry collapses or whatever happens. Everything turns on them, and he says, some blows break the spell, and it hits you every day until you need to hit as well. And what a great way to explain that kind of frustration that you just mentioned in the quote. Everything turned through no fault of their own, and the frustration builds up so much that this person turns to someone who they love with violence. And obviously he's not condoning that, and he's not trying to give an excuse for that, but he's showing that these types of things happen, and these types of things cause these other smaller things to happen. And he's showing why that's the case, and just other examples of the terrible things that happen as a result of these larger things happening, the fallout, so to speak. Mm. And then what I think is interesting is that that first verse is aimed at what I'm assuming is the man. And then the second verse is aimed at the woman. It all seemed fine for you until the struggle of ambition turned in violence upon you. Sometimes a landslide comes, and if you're hiding in that avalanche, you need a place to run. It all seemed fine for the woman until the struggle of ambition that the husband was feeling to make this life for them, to provide a good life for the family, it turned on him, and that in turn turned into violence on the woman. And I love how he's taking both of their perspectives there in those two verses. And the chorus really sums up, as Stuart said in that quote you read, it really encapsulates Steeltown as a whole. It's just a shadow of the man or the woman that you should be. You can do better. You can do so much better in this life. There's more that you can be, but it doesn't mean that you will do better. And I think that's the Stuart that we all know and love. He's not saying you will accomplish this. He's just saying there's something else out there, but it's up to you to find it. It's up to you to find that garden in the forest that the world will never see or may never see unless you do something about it. And that's that promise that he mentions later in the song, that promise that there is a garden in the forest somewhere, but it's up to you to find it. And that goes back to In a Big Country to me, not expecting to grow flowers in the desert. It's really the same thing to me in a lot of ways. But he's saying that there is something that the world may never see, but it's up to you to let them see it. And then in the later sections of the song, he's talking about frustration again and never finding a hand. And I always found the mention of El Dorado interesting when he says, did we ever have it good while we lived in El Dorado? Did we find the gold we should? And it's kind of there. He's saying, were the good old days maybe really the good old days? Was this struggle for wealth and for materialism? I often kind of took that as kind of a search for materialism and his comments on it. El Dorado being this mythical place that has been written about many times, and it's kind of this lost city of wealth that people often search for, and the city of gold. And I don't remember all the specifics about it, but I know that people would search for this place and they would end up dying or killing others in this vain search for this place called El Dorado that was this mythical place of gold and riches and wealth. And it always, kind of like going back to the whole One Ring of Sauron, it always poisoned the person who became infatuated with finding this place. And I just think that it's interesting that he mentions that and chose that word. It's kind of like, If it really was true that riches or wealth or just flat out materialism or even just flat out trying to place financial ambition over things like family and obviously they all go together. You've got to work. You've got to make money for a family. And so it's not like he's bringing it down to that level, but I guess he's saying making that your main priority to move ahead, quote unquote, if that was really the thing that everyone should strive for, why does it always lead to people's faces filled with anger? And he goes back to the whole youth thing, which he mentions in The Great Divide. They should only shine with youth, but this quest for the mythical place of El Dorado, this quest for material fulfillment in Stuart's mind here really is only leading to bad places. And it's not like the people he's mentioned in the beginning of this song are consumed with riches. I mean, they're just consumed with getting by and making a good life for themselves, which is a completely, as he said again in that quote, a dignified, respectable thing for anyone to do. So I don't know. We've got maybe two different factions that he's mentioning here. But it all comes back to the same thing. It's just a shadow of the people we should be. There's so much more that we can do. And I just love the final verse and the final line. And this is where he kind of gives that hint. There is a promise. There's a promise comes of living fit for all. But then he says, if we only get our back against the wall, you might think, well, what does that mean? Because it almost seems like he's asking people to put their back against the wall. Whereas when you think of someone with their back against the wall, you think that it's there not by a desire to put their back against the wall, but it's there because they have no other choice. They're backing up. They're finding themselves backed into a corner. And there's certainly that comes into play here too. But I've always looked at that line, well, not always, but at least in the last, you know, number of years as I've looked at the lyrics more, as them push, of them purposefully pushing against a wall that is closing. I kind of look at that line as or that whole imagery there, sort of like someone being in a room where the walls are closing and they're going to eventually just destroy who's ever in there or squash them, take them back to the Star Wars, the first Star Wars, with the shut down all the garbage mashers on the detention level.
Say that 10 times fast.
Yeah, exactly. I'm surprised I said it once. But the walls are closing. You've got to literally get your back against the wall to push against the walls as they're closing in on you. That's kind of how I've took that. And if more people do that, he's saying in this song, if more people will put their back against these walls that are closing and push, maybe they can reverse it and make them go the other way. And I love just the lines when he says he's looked at backs who have tried to do that for years, scarred by many knives and too much fear. So again, he can't help it. He can't help but come back to, you know, but it still might be hopeless.
Yeah, it's not a promising outlook that you should do this. By the way, these guys did it for a long, long time, and they're just scarred, man.
I know. That's so typical of Stewart's lyric writing, and I love it. But yeah, he does offer us a chance. It's kind of, again, that movie line. So there is a chance when someone says a 1 in a million chance. So you're saying there's a chance. Well, yeah, but, you know. But yeah. So it's tough lyrics, again. Yeah, just very, very tough. But there is this... this glimmer, there's a glimmer there, and that's what I've always loved about the song, and about I think it's a great way to end the album, because I don't want everything to end on just complete blackness, as Stewart's liner notes referred to, out of light, darkness, the circle closes. Tough way to write about this album, but it's not completely accurate when you look at this song. I mean, the circle is just about closed, make no mistake about it, but there is still something there. There is something there, and if someone can see it and move toward it, maybe there's a chance someone can get out of it. So there's my take on the lyrics. Musically, it's just a gorgeous, gorgeous song. It's one of his best, one of Stewart's best, one of the band's best, I should say, really. Creations. The chords are beautiful. It's again a little different from the songs that we've heard on the album so far before. It's a more laid back feel. There's a lot of power in the song still. There's a lot of attitude in the presentation, but there's still kind of a melancholy. We fought the battle that we fought for the past 9 songs. Now we're overlooking and seeing the carnage and what has happened, and we're looking at it from a perspective of taking a step back now and looking at the broad view of what's just happened. And I get that from the music. It's just great chord progressions, beautiful, clean chords happening there. And again, in an album full of great intros, we've got another just gorgeous intro. And played on guitar, I'm assuming there's some kind of effect going on there. I never exactly figured out what that effect was on the guitars, but it's got this keyboard synthesizer type of feel to it, much like Tall Ships Go had, but it's not. It's mainly guitars there, and some bass pedal thing happening from Tony. And man, what a beautiful sound it makes. And again, when I go back to my friend Chris, I heard that sound and I immediately thought, wow, someone of like mind here. And because someone who grasps that and really is taken by that sound of that song, I think we've all would look to that intro as one of the reasons we love Big Country. But there's not a whole lot to say about it musically as far as specific moments. It just, as a whole, it just works so perfectly. It works so beautifully. And that outro, again, another tremendous, tremendous outro for a song here. When it gets into the kind of the double time playing from Mark and the just beautiful melodic lead lines from Stewart. And it's not like he's playing, but that's what I love so much about Stewart's guitar playing here. He's not just going off on these improvised lead parts, which he certainly could have done there. He's playing what is clearly a structured melodic piece, but it has all of the power of a great searing lead guitar solo. But it's very structured and it's very thought out, and the melody that he uses just continues to work so well with the way the music is rising and the emotions that are rising, and it's just a fantastic play out. I can't think of a better way to end an album. I can't think of a better way that a Big Country album has ever ended. And I think we almost...
I agree.
Yeah, I mean, I think we almost got an attempt at it on I Could Be Happy here, but it kind of reminds me of a similar type of attempt at a play out, but of course that's not even in the same league. It really is just a shadow, but as far as just that kind of attempt, I kind of see some similarities there. But yeah, just an incredibly strong song, and I mentioned this on Steeltown, the presentation of that on the Sear Live in New York video, when they have a little video vignette to that song. You get that on Just a Shadow too, so go back if you've got that, watch the Sear Live in New York, and when they play this song live, the director does another really cool montage of these old clips that just go along really, really well with the music that's being played. And I still don't quite get the whole old people thing that he mentions as in other times he's introduced this song. Maybe you have some light you could shed on that, but it doesn't matter. I again, take the overriding feel of the message of the song can be summed up in that one line. It's just a shadow of the people we can be. And I think that's what he wants to leave the listener with after he's gone through this meticulous depiction throughout this album of these different scenarios. This is the final message he wants to leave you with. And it's a brilliant message.
After the character assassination on the future of mankind.
That's right. That's right. So
I don't care a lot of the old people either. I think even he says, why are faces filled with anger that should only shine with youth? And I guess he could mean that old people could also shine with youth if you look at youth as some sort of energetic or optimistic kind of outlook.
But
I don't know where that comes from.
That's very interesting. That could be the section in the song that he's thinking about old people, because he's saying, did we ever have it good? And you do often hear that from older people, back in the good old days, quote.
You definitely lived a while when you start asking that.
Yeah.
You don't ask a 20-year-old right out of school, did we ever have it good?
Right.
You know, well, my childhood was all right. No, so that could give those associations, but it's still a stretch. I kind of think he includes everybody, because this is not about necessarily having lived a life and failed at living up to your potential. This is someone who's failing now.
Yeah.
So this is, I think, someone who's going on, but I don't think he excludes old people, but I don't see why it's about old people.
We do get them in the video, though, so they must have had some thought about them, you know?
Yeah. Well, maybe that's where it comes from, to be honest.
We don't get any lyrical references to a cat, though.
I think I rant. You're trying to set me up for another rant, are you?
I'm trying to get a rant in here.
I know, to please Kenny. No, but... to take a step back, it's clearly about people not achieving their potential, and that makes it a sister song to, again, East of Eden, where people are trapped in a situation that they can't get out of. But this might be less about being trapped and more about not getting the opportunities or taking the opportunities or being on the wrong path. Either way, you're not living up to your potential. So that's what it's about. And yeah, I think you covered that quite nicely. So the theme of violence is very interesting, where it hits you every day until you need to hit as well, and the struggle and ambition turn on violence upon you. I think I agree with your theory that this is more a byproduct of the situation rather than a song about violence. But I think for years I've heard a song about domestic violence, where I see it more as a side product or an ingredient, if you will, in the bigger picture. So the interesting thing is, this is, you mentioned the flower in the desert. Here we have the garden in the forest that the world will never see. And he picked that up again on Remembrance Day with the flower in the forest that the world will never see.
Ah, interesting.
So this is a very it's a red thread in Stewart's writing. So he would use it certainly in what people consider the golden trilogy of albums. There's references to this throughout on at least one song. And I think he refers to really the potential again, that within us there is a place, a flower, as he says in Remembrance Day, a garden, as he says in Just a Shadow, that if the world never sees it, that means it's hidden, it doesn't come out. It could be the potential, it could be the man or the woman you could be. So I think it's clearer. It works for me better as a flower, because the flower is something that can spring bloom, and the people who see it sees who you are. And I think there's also the private aspect, that it's not just the potential, but it's really the private side of you that you don't show to anyone. And if you hide it, you also hide some of the potential there, because people in interaction with other people, obviously who you are and how you present yourself is one side of it. So I think coming from a very private person, as Stewart arguably was, that's a very interesting sentence to put into several songs about a private side of yourself and slash potential, where I think that Just a Shadow is more about the potential, but maybe Remembrance Day is more about the private side.
Yeah, very interesting.
It's a thing that I've seen. And obviously in later songs, he would never use these words. He would not use perhaps the more mystical or poetic way of phrasing it, but he definitely touched on this topic in a more direct way.
One thing about garden, though, that's interesting is that the interesting choice is that a garden tends to help more than one person. So I wonder if that was in his thought process rather than saying a single flower, but who knows?
Yeah, the flower is definitely the person that, himself being hidden away.
Right.
Whereas the garden perhaps is
something everyone could benefit from, which seems to be like a theme for this song. You know, if everyone tries to improve themselves, everyone can benefit.
Yeah, definitely. Maybe if you stay in a garden, you don't have your back against the wall, so to speak,
and
you don't it doesn't have to turn into violence. So there are many things there that are going on, but it all points to the same thing, that people are not achieving their potential. And I don't know if I agree with you on how hopeful this song is. To me, it's a pretty bleak song. It offers no solution other than perhaps that there is that thing. You should try. You should do something.
Yeah, and that's all I'm saying it is. I don't really view it as a, quote, hopeful song either. I just think he just is saying there is something you can do, but you very well may not find it.
So right. Yeah, I was just thinking what you said about the album ending on perhaps with that glimmer of hope. Yeah, perhaps that's enough.
Yeah.
Perhaps that is maybe not the glimmer of hope, but at least an urge to try.
Well, it's not a blinding light of hope, but it is just a little flicker glimmer. It's just a little glimmer.
Out of light, darkness.
Yeah.
Now, but one thing I do agree on is the way the album ends musically with that play out. I think that the last 90 seconds is glorious. And that melody line that he plays throughout, it's kind of what he did those first two albums. I think already on The Seer, we started getting less of that and more of the conventional guitar solo. You see kind of still shades of it, but the first two albums, you get a 100% that kind of treatment, where instead of guitar solos, you have a melody line that is played, designed, works perfectly, works absolutely perfectly. And also the huge playouts, we discussed them in the past, kind of like The Crossing has that, the song The Crossing. Eastworld has that, a long, glorious playout, which again, for 1993, makes me think of these times, like where he designed a guitar line, because that's not a flaring solo either.
Right.
It's a very nicely played line.
Yep.
And you have traces of it in Into the Fire, on No Place Like Home, of all albums, you could say. It ends on a long, gorgeous playout.
That's right.
So they have some of them there, and I love them. I can't think of a single one of those playouts that I don't like. And I would pine for one on the next album. So please, something like this would be a wonderful way to end an album or even a song. It just to have something like that.
I
so
agree.
That is a gorgeous way of ending the album, I think.
Have we ended the album?
I think we have.
Holy madre de Dios. We did it. We actually did do it this time. We pretended last time.
But overall, you know, this is a springboard for further discussion or for people to reflect on it on their own.
A springboard?
It makes sense.
This is a springboard. This is a deep, dark abyss of Steel Town discussion. This is a deep dive if I have ever seen a deep dive. Come on now. This is like 4 hours of 4 or 5 hours of deep Steel Town discussion.
It is.
A springboard?
This deep dive will serve as a springboard for people to dive further into the album in the areas where we might not have had local knowledge.
Before we jump too much in like the debriefing wrap-up thing, we should, before it escapes us, we should rank Just a Shadow and give our favorite lyric.
You're absolutely right.
So for me, my favorite lyric of this song would have to be, "If it really was the truth, why are faces filled with anger that should only shine with youth?" Beautiful way to that. Beautiful lines that can be applied to many different things that people look at as the quote unquote truth. And as someone who was just out yesterday in the thralls of people doing Christmas shopping, as soon as I even got into the mall parking lot, someone pulled out in front of me and almost caused an accident. And I'm just thinking, like, is it really all about this? And I know I was a part of it too. But so you can even apply it to that. And I saw many faces filled with anger yesterday.
The struggle of Christmas shopping turned in violence up on you.
That's right. And then I saw the sweet faces of my children shining with youth.
Yes.
So you can apply that to so many different things, but I think that's a beautiful line. But how about you?
This was a bit ridiculous, but you can apply it to things, but I think that... No, I would pick Scarred by Many Knives and Too Much Fear for probably not so obvious reasons, but that goes back to when I listened to it as a 12-year-old, and that line just stood out for whatever reason. And so it still stands out because I noticed it then, and it's become one of those things that the last word on the album is fear.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
I think of it in those terms. And it's a powerful line, and especially in regards to the discussion we had on that particular verse of pushing the back against the wall, and how much hope is that? You should try to push the back against the wall, but then you have the knives and you have the fear. It's a very deep line.
It really is.
Because if this is a song with people driven by fear, that's it brings a whole different... It casts a light on the rest of the song from that just that last word.
Yep, definitely. No, good choice. Where do you rank the song?
The space I have left, unfortunately, because I think so highly of it, is number 8.
I was feeling bad about mine. Now I don't feel quite as bad. Yeah, I know. I feel so strongly about the song, and yet it ranks at number 7. And I'm looking at it like, really? Wow. But it really is one of the songs that I would not necessarily seek out as often as the other one. So I guess that's why it fell back, and I can't explain why, but... I guess
I have to agree. This is a song with some road wear. It has been played a lot.
Yeah.
And not a lot of the songs on this album has that road wear. But Just a Shadow is a song that they have played live.
I think the image that it's hit me about the rankings of this song, I think of all of these songs as like 10 thoroughbred horses. And they're they're in this great race. And one of them is just going to win by a nose. And all the rest are right there. So that's how I look at these rankings. There aren't any horses that are... lagging in the rear or way behind. So
no song is the horse's ass.
That's right. Only the hosts of the show.
So before we move too far away from the rankings,
yeah,
you want to hear the total one?
Yeah, let's hear it.
So this is the total ranking for Steel Town as per Tom and Svein. And the best song or the one with the lowest score, which is good. If we rank a song number 1, that says that is good. So low points is great. Where the Rose is Sown got 4 points. That is our favorite joint song.
Got it. Okay.
Steel Town and Flame of the West both got 6 points. So they follow there.
Cool.
Then we have Tall Ships Go got 8 points. The Great Divide and Come Back to Me both got 12. Girl with Grey Eyes got 13. Rain Dance got 14. Just a Shadow got 15. And East of Eden squarely last with 20.
Nice. Well, not nice. I don't know. I I feel sad about any song coming in last here. So, but yeah, it's interesting.
You can't argue East of Eden, since that was the one song we didn't have any difference on, but Just a Shadow, second to last, already I feel bad.
Yeah.
That's a brink of bad conscience, but we already said how little the rankings mean. We do it for academic purposes.
So as we wrap up here, I mean, what else is there left to say? I guess we can talk a little bit about some of the B-sides that didn't quite make the album. I mean, we've got, I think probably the main one that people will talk about is Winter Sky, which was recorded after the album came out, I believe, or after the album was recorded, Winter Sky was recorded.
Yeah.
Bruce actually added something to this. He said it was recorded in Edinburgh long after Stockholm. It was recorded last minute for a B-side, only Stuart and I on it. I played 12-string and used Bill Nelson's White Hoyer for lead bits. Stuart played bass guitar, then snare drum on keyboard. I played bass drum on keyboard. Stuart did all the vocals. Would have been great to have had Tony and Mark on it, but it had to be done the next day at Phonogram's request to make pressing deadline. Phew, glad I got, he says, phew, glad I got that one out. So he's, yeah, I'm glad too, because what a great, beautiful song. But I know we, on the roundtable discussion, I know Arlen had mentioned specifically that the song didn't really sound the same as a Steeltown song. Well, there's a big reason for it. It was not done in the studio that Steeltown was recorded. It was not done with Tony. It was not done with Mark. And it was put together very quickly. But boy, what a beautiful song.
It's a nice little song. It's kind of impressive if they can knock out that on short notice. Yeah. Then, you know, just keep at it. But one of my favorites is the cover of, let me see, what's it called? Prairie Rose.
Oh, yeah.
How can I forget that? The Prairie Rose is, that would be my favorite B-side from the entire Steeltown sessions. I think it's a ferocious song. And we talked about it on the B-side episode 3 years ago. Or something like that.
Has it been that long? Good Lord.
Two, at least. If not three. Yeah, it's... no, it's 2.5, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, something like that.
So we talked about that quite a bit. And yeah, I think that one is great. And obviously we have Belief in the Small Man, which is a song that had the full production quality of the album. I think that was done in Stockholm.
That's the one for me. For me, Prairie Rose, I really like a lot of it, but it doesn't connect with me nearly as much as it does with some other people. Musically, maybe because it's not their song, I don't know, but there's something about it. It's ferocious, but for me, Belief in the Small Man is the song that just does it for me. That the only thing I would say about that being on the album, I think musically it reminds me of The Great Divide in places. So maybe there was too much of a similarity there, I don't know, but that to me is just a majestic song. And by the way, the version on the deluxe edition, which has just the musical version of that song, I'm so happy that's on there, because it's so great to hear those guitar parts isolated and without, just so great to hear the instrumental version of that, because it's just an incredible song to me. I love that song. Yeah. It's mind-boggling that that's a B-side, but I know we say that about a lot of big country B-sides, but...
Oh, yeah. We certainly do.
That and is
it's called Bass Concerto, by the way.
Right. That's right. How could I forget that?
Yeah.
Bass concerto full of huge distorted guitars, but interesting.
Sure. And then we have the 12-inch mixes.
Yeah. And
what's to say about those? I mean, they are almost in the same category as these rough mixes that we got on the deluxe. Because you really hear the parts. I think the 12-inch mixes on Steeltown are glorious.
Me too.
As good as the ones for the Seer are bad.
Yeah. And I think there are the ones on the Seer that stand out are clearly the ones with the horns and stuff. There are some other ones that I actually like. But yeah, the ones on Steeltown are really good. And in fact, the East of Eden one is my favorite, which is interesting considering that came in as our last ranked song. But I love the way that's done on the 12-inch, mainly because they really do bring out certain guitar parts and isolate certain things, and it sounds a little bit more or less cluttered, I guess, musically to me on the 12-inch, which is kind of odd because usually a 12-inch might be more cluttered, but they really strip it down on the 12-inch, like piece by piece, and I love that. I love the approach of it.
Now, I wouldn't say I prefer it to the album, but I think it's more interesting than the album, if that makes sense at all.
No, it does, because, I mean, the 12-inch, by definition, is not really meant to be a song.
Right.
You know, so it's not like this is a better version of the song of East of Eden, but I think I would have liked it if the song had maybe taken some of the leads from the 12-inch mix and maybe stripped it down a little bit more in places. But I don't know. I remember Where the Roses Sown has some cool stuff as well on there, and just
great bass lines.
Yeah, yeah.
And we talk about Tony on this album. You hear him on the 12-inch mixes up front, and I think that's the majesty, that parts are lifted up front. And the guitars were already kind of up front, so it's the bass that is noticeable, and some of the drum fills that are just used there with echo. So he will do one, and then it will trail off.
Yeah.
And it just kind of underpins the greatness. You get it right there.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess really the last thing to say about, I mean, at least from my perspective, would be maybe the Steeltown tour over the years. I mean, it's kind of one of those tours that has that, at least for me, who and probably for you too, who wasn't there. It's like, I think we said it once before, actually, it's like our Kiss Creatures of the Night tour.
Exactly. I was thinking of that. I was just thinking exactly the same thing.
People were scratching their head, and in the Kiss career trajectory of Kiss, they released this really heavy, dark album called Creatures of the Night, and it was not a success for them. And they did a very short tour of the album, and there's very little footage of it. There aren't as many bootlegs of it. And like among Kiss fans, they're always clamoring for this Kiss Creatures of the Night show. You know, if they ever came out with a great professionally shot version of something from the Creatures of the Night tour, it would be a great dream come true for Kiss fans. But that's kind of how I looked at the Steeltown tour. It's like I never quite got a feel for what it was like. And I know I've heard some shows, and the one in Edinburgh is one of the ones that I've heard probably the most from. But
I started out these episodes by reading out the dates and the timeline for Steeltown. And if you look back at those and the tour, they started touring in October, the Town and Country Tour. It started on October the 6th, and it consisted of a series of shows in the UK, and it culminated with the Wembley shows in December. Mm. So they had 2 months. 1 month, which or at least a couple of weeks. They started before the album was out even, which is kind of a little strange. And then they didn't tour much in 1985.
Yeah.
So it was a short tour, and it's not a very circulated tour.
No, it's
not. There's not a whole lot of stuff from it.
But you know, we do have something. But yeah, it's. I would love to have been at any of those shows, and probably the best way to wrap things up now is to comment on the current tour, which is probably over by the time this comes out. They've done it. They've played Steeltown in its entirety on many, many nights. And I don't know how much you've looked at the footage, but everything I've seen, I've really been impressed with the way it sounded. I'm impressed with the way Simon has sung these songs. And I give a lot of props to the guys for figuring these songs out, for finally bringing some of these songs that have never been played before, to giving them live life. And sure, it's always a melancholy feeling when you're hearing them and Stuart's not there and you're missing him. But boy, I think they've done justice to these songs, and I'm really proud of them for doing this. And it was a great thing to do.
I think those who cannot get over the fact that Stuart isn't there, that's a fair point. I think they have left, most of them. So those who are still here are itching to hear this material. And it's a big credit that they did it. Big credit that they pulled it off. And we only have to go back a couple of interviews where Bruce was saying, first of all, most of them can't be played. That was the first time. And then in episode, I think 31, that was the first of this year, he said, well, most of them can be played, but we probably won't do that one or that one. And now they're playing all of them. So I guess it's been a process for them as well to just relearn and get into it.
Yeah, definitely. It's I'm sure it meant a lot to them, and I know I think Bruce said something like it was going to be sad for these shows to end. So it must have meant a lot to them too. So hopefully we can get them on at some point down the road in the new year, and we can ask them about their experience touring this album. That'll be interesting. And but yeah, so I mean that's Steeltown, everyone. that's our deep dive of Steel Town, and I think I speak for Svein when I say we are both excited and relieved that this one is in the can, so to speak. Don't go anywhere with that.
Okay. My mouth was open, but it closed.
I'm impressed that your knowledge of English goes so far that you could even recognize the opportunity for a joke with saying in the can.
A toilet reference? Come on.
Good for you. CJ, stop laughing too, wherever you are right now. And lay off the sauce. All right, so I got nothing left. I'm emotionally dead inside.
We are running on fumes here.
So yeah, so thanks.
My mouth was open again, but I closed it again.
All right, well, even I can't figure that one out, but I'll someone else.
Okay. Anyway. I'll put it in the Yuletide.
All right, good. As always, find us on Facebook, The Great Divide. Just search for that. Find us, send us an email, bigcountrypodcast@gmail.com. Find us on Twitter @bigcountrypod. And that is it until next time, which might be a Yuletide episode if we can get that done in time. And who knows what will be coming next year, but I guess we'll talk about that on the Yuletide show if it, in fact, does come to pass.
The Yuletide will come to pass one way or the other.
All right. I'll take your word for it.
Yeah.
As I sit here with my head in my hands.
But that's what makes me smile.
My face should only be shining with youth, and now it is, well, at least with middle age. And now it is hanging in sorrow, thinking about all the editing that lies before me as I record these words.
What a thought. A face shining with middle age. Oh my God, that's hilarious.
All right, that's it. We're going to play something at the outro to this. As I write this, as I say this, I mean, we have no idea what it is. So it could be a cover. It could be a big country song. It could be all of the above. So enjoy it. And we'll see you next time.
Hello.
We'll be right back. These next two songs we're going to play are actually things that run into each other. And the first one is called Where the Roses Sown, and it's about how people would sacrifice one generation on behalf of the other. Where the Roses Sown.
A good effort. Oh, well, decidedly that. An excellent effort. You have shown us something quite new tonight.
It is new. It is, isn't it, sire?
Yes, indeed.
So, then you liked it. You really liked it, sire.
Well, of course I did. It's very good. Of course, now and then, just now and then, it seemed a touch,
What do you mean, sire?
Well, I mean, occasionally it seems to have, how shall one say, Director?
Too many notes, Your Majesty.
Exactly. Very well put. Too many notes.
I don't understand. There are just as many notes, Majesty, as are required, neither more nor less.
Well, my dear fellow, there are, in fact, only so many notes the ear can hear in the course of an evening. I think I'm right in saying that, aren't I, Court Composer?
Yes. Yes. On the whole, yes, Majesty.
This is absurd.
My dear young man, don't take it too hard. Your work is ingenious. It's quality work. And there are simply too many notes, that's all. Just cut a few and it'll be perfect.
Which few did you have in mind, Majesty?